The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly Extra Podcast.
Winners of the Sony for Best Football Podcast with special commendation in the field of vampire bat jokes, it's Football Weekly Extra.
James, wake up. We have to do a part.
Well, as I was saying, as short-changed as Paula Radcliffe after that marathon toilet break incident, it's Football Weekly Extra, back and bitter as a grateful German. Our mantelpiece may be empty, but there's bags on our agenda, like Wednesday's big clash in Manchester, Zenit St. Petersburg over Rangers. We look forward to this weekend at Wembley, the Cardiff-Portsmouth FA Cup they said could never happen. Sorry, should never happen. There's Neil Warnock, Ian Dowie, and yes, Zinedine Zidane in our update on the latest from the Championship. Serie A heading down to Il Waro, Sid in Spain. A salute to Rui Costa, and because no one else would give us an award, here come our very own end-of-season gongs.
This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra.
And good morning, everybody. On board today, Sean Ingle, a little bit out of puff, Sean.
Hello, James.
How are you? Careful with our oxygen supplies, if you don't mind. James Dart, good to have you on board, sir.
Morning, James.
And hello, Barry, or should I say, Ponce in Chief, TM.
Hello.
Hello, Barry. You're in a fine mood now. You looked a little bit grumpy before.
I was grumpy, yes.
Why was that then, Barry?
Because I came in, I had discovered we were recording early. I had 4 minutes to prepare for the podcast.
Right, okay.
Which admittedly...
And you didn't know what to do with the other three.
Two minutes longer than usual. Yeah. So I was at a loose end for a while. And then Sean was late. He knew we were here. He knew we were waiting. And right. He still managed to be late.
Right, I think he does that on purpose. Yeah. Sean, all good?
It is. How are you, James? Because you must have had a stinking hangover after the Sony Awards on Monday. Just to let readers know.
Listeners.
I left James at just probably before midnight.
Right.
And I had to go back home. And James had been drinking the wine and the champagne all night and said, fancy coming along to the Satanta end-of-season party. Hopefully it'll be at China White's, you said. And I think the next 12 hours were a blur.
We ended up in some gentleman's club in St. James's.
You're no gentleman.
Well, indeed not. But then many of the clientele.
You, Les Ferdinand,
There were lots of people there. Amongst them were various ex-footballers on Satanta's books. And I ended up being furnished with drinks for Ray Parlophone in the next 3 hours or so, which is, of all the people to pick, you'd really want to... When you see what he did to Tony Adams, you'd want to maybe... there you go, eh? You've got to learn sometime.
And what's this I hear about you doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu on unsuspecting people at 2 a.m. in the morning?
Oh, bloody hell, it can be. You've got a big... Well, let's move on, eh?
Who actually ended up winning the Sony? It was Jimmy Greaves or something.
All the awards are in the wrong hands, I think it was called.
It was
All the tickets are in the wrong hands.
It was a one-off thing from Ian St. John and John Aldridge about how Liverpool fans were so unlucky.
Right,
not
I have to say, it was a radio show. And it was a radio category, so they did have that over.
I believe we got beaten by Fighting Talk as well.
We were in a non...
I was listening to Fighting Talk last Saturday, and Colin Murray was doing Mr. T impersonations.
No.
So they're stealing our material as well as our awards.
Our bad material.
Right.
Because
that's true, because you are the first person who ever did it.
Yeah. Well, his Mr. T impressions are worse than mine because he does them in a Northern Irish accent.
Right, okay.
And it's like, I pity the fool.
What should Mr. T sound like then, Barry?
I just have a little problem with Fighting Talk in general in that it's a load of smug hacks sitting around cracking lame gags about footballers. Who wants to listen to a show like that? Childish.
Moving right along then. Now, what about Zenit St. Petersburg? Oh, we need to get Kevin McCarron on the line. He's driving back from Manchester right now, and hopefully he's going to answer our call because we want to know what it was like in Manchester. It was actually heaving yesterday and all sorts of stuff. Hello?
Hello, how are you?
Ah, Kevin McCarron, how are you doing?
I'm not bad. I'm actually driving, but you know.
Yeah, okay. Have you pulled over now, Kevin?
Yes, indeed, right. That's right.
Okay, good. Listen, so what was it like? I mean, 150,000 Rangers fans, one working television. What was it like?
Well, I have to tell you that I was called upon experience. I went nowhere near the centre. I went to the Ring Road, even back to the Ring Road, because I didn't fancy the idea of 150,000 fans in the centre of Manchester. It's all right calling it a minority, but listening to eyewitness reports this morning of a mob of 200 chasing a policeman and so on, and one policeman having a broken arm and so on, and the guys who tried to fix the TV screen having bottles thrown at them, I think that's probably inevitable if they're there all day and drinking. You can blame the authorities, but I think it's very hard to stop these kind of problems emerging.
Yeah, at the same time, there have been questions raised. I mean, they stood to earn, I think I'm saying like 25 million is their estimate from having the final there, that maybe they didn't spend enough on actually preparing for it.
No, I mean, people are saying to them, why didn't you have, for example, youth parks instead of city centre for these fan events? And they said, well, our information was speaking to other cities, that fans wouldn't go to parks, they would stay in the centre of town, you know. But you, in a way, it was unfortunate for Manchester that one of the teams was so nearby. When Celtic went to Seville for 2003 UEFA Cup final, it was 80,000, but to get about double that in the one place, I think the risk of public order trouble was always apparent.
Surely we should be blaming the Rangers fans here, not the authorities. I mean, it's something we've got to take responsibility of. I mean, I saw them on breakfast telly about 7 in the morning. They were still drinking their cans of special McBrew, McTin.
Was Ray Parler there? Or
I thought I saw you in the crowd, James.
Well, I mean, people always say it's a minority, but it's not a minority that left Manchester City Centre waist-deep in litter and piss and vomit. And it's not a minority that sing songs linking Jock Stein with a child abuse cover-up, you know?
I mean, even if it was a minority, it's still a lot of people when you're talking about 150,000 or whatever. Let's say it was only 10%, that'd be 15,000, a huge number. And they are accountable. It's a long time ago, but Rangers are the only team to be banned from European football because the fans rioted towards the end of winning the trophy in 1972. So, there's a history of problems there, and there's no point trying to pretend that Rangers are just unfortunate. There's been a long history of this, and the club recently has started campaigns like Pride Over Prejudice, but really these kind of attempts to influence fans should have been made a long, long time ago, and the club was slow in that regard. People who came to the game, English people coming to the game, journalists and so on, were somewhat taken aback to hear the people on the bus singing being up to their knees in Fenian blood. And if you're in Glasgow, you wouldn't even notice, because that's what the fans would sing. But it is depressing, and you can blame the authorities, but Sean's right. In the end, the people who throw bottles at someone trying to fix a screen are accountable, and it can't just be kind of shrugged aside. It would make anyone anywhere fearful of having Rangers come to play in their town.
What about the game then, Kevin, which would also probably make people fearful about people?
I thought Rangers did as well as they humanly could. Even at the beginning of the second half, they actually tried to attack, and there was that flurry, and I think probably was a penalty in Ferguson's heel was caught. But of course, Zenit should have had a penalty as well, so it doesn't matter. The better team by far won. Arshavin was terrific. They were one of the better teams. They've won the Europa Cup in recent years. They play quite good football.
To be honest, I'm sick of people, Kevin, like you, Kevin, and no offence meant, that say that we as a British-based pod should salute plucky Rangers for reaching the UEFA Cup final. I mean, let's be honest, if an Italian team, Empoli, say, had reached the final, you know, scoring 5 goals in 9 games, playing 9 men behind the ball football that's dull on a wet weekend in Woolacan, would we be saying plucky Empoli? Catanaccio.
We'd be saying plucky Empoli.
I know you would.
That would be amazing, Empoli games.
But to be fair, Sean, I mean, no one's asking you to watch. But if I'm manager of Rangers, I'm not going to get knocked out to amuse Sean Ingle. Well, let's get real. I mean, they don't have players like Arshavin. Timoshuk cost 10 million. Rangers don't have players like that anymore either. They did the best they could to get to the final. Your idea that you're going on a kamikaze mission is preposterous.
No, I agree with you, but it's not Rangers' fault. Rangers are only doing what they can do within the laws of the game.
And they did it well.
Of course they did, but surely it's the laws of the game are slightly at fault if defending has become too easy. When you've got the likes of Rangers reaching UEFA Cup final, Greece winning Euro 2004, surely we should be encouraging teams
to attack more. Bayern Munich did get knocked out. And they're a good team. Defending's quite tricky. Rangers did a lot better than Bayern Munich did against Zenit Petersburg.
Would have a bunch of four centre halves, one of whom's good, I think, can basically let in, how many goals Rangers let in over the course. Defending has become too easy.
I think we're probably labouring on the point of Rangers a bit too much. I think Zenit deserves some real credit for victory. Yeah. And I'd like to know from Kevin's view, having seen the game last night in person, what he thought of the likes of Arshavin, who's obviously been linked with a lot of clubs in the Premier League for this summer, and Dick Advocaat speaking this morning, expecting a potential exodus from the club.
Yes, Arshavin's come through the youth ranks at Zenit, and perhaps even they, rich as they are with Gazprom's money, might think it's time to cash in. I think he's, obviously he's a terrific player. We saw him against England already back in the autumn when he was a key man in Steve McLaren's defeat in Moscow. I think he probably could do it in the Premier League. He seems to me quite strong. I think that's the main thing. Look at Modric, for example. I wonder whether the grind of the Premier League will wear him down a bit at Spurs. I think that's also a question for these guys. Do you think they can cope with the attritional nature of English domestic football?
Kevin, listen, one other bit of news which has come through, I guess, overnight. It's the death of Tommy Burns.
Yes. I mean, like every Scottish football writer, I knew Tommy fairly well. And he really was a wonderful person. He's a very warm-hearted person. People will also know he was devoutly religious, but not in a kind of po-faced, tiresome sort of way. He had a really sharp sense of humour that was quite mischievous. And he also had a tremendous temper, as I personally experienced. But once he finished explaining to me why he wasn't happy, he then put his arm around my shoulder and said, "Anything you want to know, just come and knock on my door." And that was it. He could go from being furious with you to being friendly.
Come on, Kevin. Why was he so upset with you?
Oh, no, it wasn't anything. Nothing at all. I'd just written something really unhappy about. So, right.
Had you written about how great Rangers' defensive tactics were?
Yeah. Tommy was also a fine player. He grew up near the ground. He was taught at the school where my father was a teacher, incidentally. So he was really geographically, emotionally, and his family background were forged tremendous bonds with Celtic and with the support. He was a player who just sort of felt slightly short of the top class, but he was very skillful. And for that, too, he was loved already as a player, even before he became manager. So he's probably one of those figures who epitomises a club and really will always be remembered.
Well, very sad. Just 51 years old, Tommy Burns.
That's terrible.
Pretty good. Kevin, listen, well, safe journey back.
Thank
you. And look forward to speaking to you hopefully on Monday.
OK, see you soon.
Nice one. Thanks,
bye.
Kevin.
Bye.
Now, coming up in part two, Sid Lowe on the line shortly, and the grand finale of the Italian season. But first off, those championship playoffs. Excitingly, Hull beating Watford 6-1 on aggregate. And they're now going to be facing Bristol City with the prize of the season of overpriced tickets and potential hammerings every weekend of the Premier League. Who's going to get it, James Dart, championship expert?
Oh, I feel quite scared after the battering that Paul Doyle got on the blog last week, having predicted Crystal Palace to claim the playoffs. Though they were the sort of a post away.
I don't know if that was necessarily what sparked the ire of...
Maybe not. Yeah. I'm now going to anger Bristol City fans again then, probably by suggesting Hull City the form side. Oof. And I think they're strong enough and have the ability to
Bristol City Palace game's a strange one, because I thought for 90 minutes Palace dominated, should have gone through if they'd have scored a penalty, and then an extra time they were just absolutely blitzed. It was like someone had flicked a switch.
It was all credit to City, and I think Gary Johnson picked up this after the match. He paid tribute to his players and the hard work that they'd done on the training ground all through the season, because they seemed just fitter and stronger. And I think that's all credit to them.
Did someone have a pop at poor old Neil Warnock?
Millions of people would like to do it, but apparently two or three Bristol City fans allegedly managed to get on at the end of the game in the invasion and swung a few little punches in Warnock.
Why does he inspire so much?
I think he sort of revels in it. He tries to claim it as a bit of a mental advantage by getting under other people's skins.
Right.
But personally, and as a former Plymouth manager, I think he's a superb manager in the Football League.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of Premier League fans hated him when he came up with Sheffield United, but more than happy to see him up there again.
All the times I've been to press conferences with Neil Warnock, and you're probably talking about a dozen over the years, you know, he's been funny, he's been amusing, there's some good quotes, there's been some insightful analysis. He does rub some people up the wrong way. I remember the time where, I think was it Sheffield United, when they played one of Megson's sides, I think it was West Brom, he made sure seven of his players were left on the pitch, so the game was abandoned.
I think that's a fantastic tactic.
You've got to like Neil Warnock.
You've got to like that. Now, so whoever goes up, is it going to be Derby Part 2? Does anyone stand a chance of sticking around in the Premier League?
City would claim to have played some decent football during the season. I still think they're punching well above their weight. They've had a phenomenal campaign. They really have. I think they're weaker than West Brom. They're weaker than Stoke. Hull themselves also would seem to be. I mean, having Nick Barmby, Dean Windus, leading your line in the Premier League, I don't see it happening. I think there's a fair few, unfortunately, in the Hull side that would sort of get cut adrift into the squad when they moved up.
Yeah, but who would move to Hull, though? I mean, let's be honest. If people don't want to move to Sunderland, who's going to...
I can tell you who could be moving to Hull. Christian Vieri has been talked
Christian
about.
Christian Vieri?
As a potential signing this summer. I mean, that's the kind of person who'd be going to
Hull. But would he leave his mum, James?
Well, she'd probably come too, but I believe he's moved to Torino.
Oh, there you go then. But there's a lot. The money will attract players. It doesn't matter where you are.
Right.
The money from the Premier League will draw the players in. Look at all the Brazilians on Teesside. Middlesbrough can be a nice place in places.
No, it can't.
If someone offered me £60,000 or £70,000 to go and record a football podcast in Hull twice a week, I'd be gone in a heartbeat.
No.
I would.
Really?
Yeah, no
problem.
Well,
there you go. Hull local radio. It's your chance. But do you see any... I mean, is Stoke, West Bromwich Albion, can they make an impact in the Premier League?
Well, Stoke's first transfer target was apparently Rob Earnshaw. So, I mean, that sort of sets out a message of their intent. Although, Rob Earnshaw apparently going to Nottingham Forest, which, again, shows us Forest intent.
Rob Earnshaw couldn't get in the Derby
County. I was going to say, did he ever get on the field?
Exactly. But apparently Nottingham Forest coming up from League One and offering £2.5 million for Rob Earnshaw. I mean, that's more than... probably at least half the sides in the Championship will be looking for the top end of the players. It's a heck of an offer.
Good then. Now, QPR have appointed Ian Dowie as their new first team coach following the last week's departure of Luigi Di Canio, who decided he missed Marmara Italia, which is obviously a big shock for Zinedine Zidane, who had been hoping that maybe this was going to be his big break in football. What was that story about?
The people went big in it on last Sunday.
Right.
And I thought it was a load of tripe then, and so it proved.
Mm. And Dowie? He's another likable fellow.
Ooh, don't. Darity he's one of Darity's bugbears here. I'll just let him go. Darity, off you go.
No, I mean, come on. Keep up all this money. They're going to be probably favourites to at least go up into the Premier League next season with all the money they spent. They've already signed up Radic Cherny, Peter Ramage. Solid. They'll be good in the Championship, I think. But Ian Dowie, come on. I mean, is that really... I mean, okay, he's in this first team coach role that Di Canio had. He's the manager to an extent.
Because it's not like he has any experience of bringing a team out of the Championship and into the Premier League.
Well, I mean, more teams in London seem to be employing than anywhere else. I mean, someone actually sent in an email this morning asking, has a manager managed more teams from one city than Ian Dowie has? I mean, crikey. From the Charlton and Crystal Palace debacles, QPR, they seriously could be threatening their promotion chances by appointing him.
He's had an amazing bit of luck because he had a decent-ish spell at Oldham. He did well at Palace in his first season to get them from nowhere into the Premier League. But since then, he's done nothing, and yet he keeps giving chance after chance after chance. A bit like me in the pod.
Can I just talk about shambling football managers getting another gig in the Football League? Mickey Adams at Brighton. What is that about?
Well, Brighton have four former managers on their books, don't they?
They do. You're going to ask me to try and remember them now, but...
No, I'm not.
Good.
Believe me, I'm not. But wow, some spleen being vented here. That's all really interesting. Good.
Do you believe that, James?
What?
That it's really interesting?
Yeah, I do. I had no idea about Brighton and their four managers.
We know that.
Yeah. I tell you what, though. How about that Sid Lowe fellow? I wonder what he's up to in Spain.
Hello!
Hi, Sid. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
We're very well, too, thanks. We're just enjoying a biscuit that was left by a rival podcast, I think, in here in the Space Pod, etc.
Yours is a Gary Baldy, I see, James.
Which all reminds me of that brilliant sketch in The Young Ones with Alexei Sale talking about biscuits, and he starts going on about Gary Baldys and stuff. And he says,
Pete Freen's exactly. Trotsky assortment.
That's my favourite. I think that's probably my favourite sketch of all time. But anyway, there we go. Revolutionary biscuits from Italy, they rise up out of your box.
You have nothing to lose but your wafers.
Your wafers.
Yum, yum, yum.
I think that's enough biscuit banter.
Right, okay.
I'm not amused by it.
All right, then.
I don't remember that.
Crumbs.
Biscuit fun police.
Well, we had the wafer cup before, and now we're just having a bit of biscuit chat.
But that's going to go down with your back gag.
Jesus.
Sid, where are you?
I'm at Ramage's training ground.
All right, then. Because it's a while since I've had a phone call like this one. With But anyway, are you actually training yourself?
No, I'm not training myself,
But they are. And why is that? Oh, they've got the final game of the season, of course, coming up.
They've got the final game of the season this weekend. Although, of course, they might not have the final game of the season this weekend. Because they're playing against Levante, who are the side that haven't been paid for 2 years. And Levante are threatening to go on strike. Amusingly, Real Madrid claimed yesterday, or was it the day before now, I can't honestly remember, that it didn't matter if Levante didn't turn up because they were in talks with big English clubs to come and play against them anyway, so that at least they could have their title-winning celebrations and stuff.
So they would have an English club turn up over a kind of testimonial, don't they?
Well, no, of course they won't, because this was the thing. They said, oh, we're in talks with big English clubs. These will be the same big English clubs whose players have all gone off on holiday now, so... I don't quite know how they reckon they were going to do that.
Sid, had Levante's players not come to some sort of agreement with their owners? Has that fallen through?
Well, that's exactly what happened, yeah. They didn't so much come to an agreement with their owners as what happened was that the club supposedly came to an agreement with the local council and what was essentially a loan shark to promise them the money to pay for the players. That agreement fell through, so the players didn't get the money that they'd been promised. So they said, all right, well, we threatened to go on strike before and you averted it at last minute. Now, this time we are going on strike.
Sid, you sound like you're engaged in some sort of relentless, energetic activity. Have we caught you at a bad time?
You caught me walking up from the bottom of the car park up towards where Real Madrid train, and it is ludicrously windy.
Oh, right.
You can hear this kind of coming through, and it does kind of
puffing.
At least you're rather short of breath this particular walk.
Yes, right. That's your story, and you're sticking to it.
Now, Sid.
I am, yes.
A couple of posts here, because I know that it's you've got this big relegation thing. We did rather talk about that on Monday. So let me just tell you a couple of things that were interesting came up in the post this week. One, Matteo83 in Warsaw says, are you guys aware of the conspiracy between the Spaniards and the English? And he goes on to explain, from 2000 to this season, that's 8 seasons, there has been...
Is this the Arsenal, Valencia, Manchester United, Real Madrid?
Yeah, when Real Madrid win the title in Spain, Man United win it in England. When Valencia win it, Arsenal win it in England. When Barcelona win it, it's always Chelsea. It's bizarre. Look at that.
It's not a conspiracy.
Well, I mean, it's not a conspiracy, but it's strange.
Have you been sitting on the...
If you've
been
sitting coincidence.
On the, it's a symmetry or a coincidence.
Have you been sitting on the grassy knoll with Oliver Stone, Jim?
Right, I didn't use the word conspiracy. Well, I did. I borrowed his word. But yeah, clearly he's making a bit of an ironic use of a word. Jalo Blue, meanwhile, in London, has that list. So you remember we were talking about the top 20 earners, and you were saying, are there any Spanish people in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there are actually... there are four players from Spanish clubs. Kaká is listed here as being the... And some people have doubted the veracity of this list, so I really don't know. However, according to this one, Kaká is the number one earner. I know that Rafael would say it was Luca Toni. Then Ronaldinho is in second place from Barcelona. Then you have to go down to Thierry Henry at Barcelona in ninth place. And then you've got Raúl and Ruud van Nistelrooy, who are down in, 16th and 17th, just ahead of Darren Bent, who, as I mentioned on Monday, beats the rest of Serie A, Darren Bent, apart from Kaká.
He's on £95,000 a week, apparently.
According to this here.
And he's worth every penny.
Indeed.
Is that before or after tax? I know in Italy your salary is the one that
is
people say
tax.
To get is that after tax.
Yeah.
But I think in England it's before tax, isn't it?
Well, I imagine that they've applied the same kind of fiscal rules to all those figures.
Because once you pay your tax and your agent and your various hangers
well,
on,
one
you're
thing.
Not really going to have much left to buy food.
This
and
is
pay
a really important
bills.
Point you're possibly hinting at here. If it is after tax, that would be a much more fair picture of how they all stack up. Because the tax situation in Italy, for example, is very, very it's a heavy fiscal burden that both clubs and players have, whereas in Spain, so you have a tremendously favourable regime in terms of player salaries. Is that not right?
Well, they have a tremendously favourable regime for player salaries for players who are foreign.
Right.
What happened was not very long ago, the Spanish government put in a rule that basically was designed to encourage foreign executives into Spanish businesses. And so what they did was that they set the upper limit of tax at 25%. Now, these foreign executives were deemed to include footballers. So, in other words, someone like David Beckham was only paying 25% tax on his wages, rather than the top band, which I think, although I might be wrong about this, was 39%.
I think there's another fiscal issue in terms of in England, with a lot of the foreign players. Not all players are paid, well, because of the falling value of the pound at the moment. I know certain players like Michael Ballack negotiated a deal so he gets paid in euros, I think, rather than pounds. But, I mean, the current tumbling value isn't good for a lot of players.
Well, absolutely. And Rafael was hinting at this when he said that the way Euro was that Luca Toni would actually whittle all over even the likes of Michael Ballack with his... But there you go. Sid, anything else we should know about the situation in the Liga?
Well, the big one is as you say, is the relegation battle of the weekend. But the relegation battle that coincides with the fight for the last UEFA Cup spot, because there's essentially four teams fighting to not have the last relegation spot and two teams fighting to have the last of the UEFA Cup spot. And those teams all play amongst each other. So, for example, Zaragoza are desperately fighting off relegation. Go to Mallorca, who are one of the sides trying to get that UEFA Cup place. And the same is true of Racing Santander, who play Osasuna. So it's all kind of tied up together on Sunday. And that means that surrounding those games, a couple on Saturday, a couple on Sunday night, there's a whole load of completely irrelevant matches.
Boy, I look forward to hearing about all that on Monday. And well done for reaching the top of that long, long walk, Sid.
I have just about made it, yeah.
Yeah, nice one. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Sid. Your exertions notwithstanding.
Cheers. All right.
Bye, Sid.
Bye.
The Guardian Football Weekly Extra Podcast.
Italy. Torino are safe and they are hosting Fiorentina, who are in fourth place. 2 points ahead of Milan, who are hosting Udinese, who don't have anything to play for. That's the picture for the Champions League. Title and relegation, Inter, the leaders, are taking on Parma. Parma are third last, 3 behind Catania, who are playing Roma, who are 1 behind leaders Inter. It does look like it's going to be very interesting. It's been heightened, the whole feeling of tension, etc., by a rather strange story about some more Inter phone taps, which I don't think is destined to particularly go anywhere, but if it does, we'll talk about it then. The fact that Parma decided on a couple of days before the game to fire Hector Cooper, their Argentine manager. They brought in a guy called Manzo in his place. And also, because there were some suspicions that because Hector Cooper was a former Inter manager, that maybe he wasn't going to push the team. But Girardi, the guy, is it Girelli? Girelli, the guy who's the owner of Parma, has been poo-pooing those stories and saying, no, we just wanted to give the team a real shot before they go into an absolutely crucial game. Parma have to win this game if they do the likelihood likelihood is Inter, though, will lose the title. And there's much being made of the fact that Fernando Couto is back from... you remember him, Fernando Couto?
Big hair.
Yeah, that's the one.
Portuguese centre-half, big hair.
Absolutely. He's back in the Parma side after some weeks out tending to his coiffure or something. And he was on field for Lazio on that fateful May day in 2002 when Inter went on the final day to claim their title away to Lazio and blew it.
I noticed on the blogs, James, you were saying that you think Inter will win and Roma won't win it this year, but is that just you as a Roma fan expecting that? Or, you know, do you really believe it?
I personally think Inter will win.
But they do choke more than, you know, an old car in a January snowstorm, don't they?
Right.
That doesn't choke, it just doesn't start.
Hold those end of season awards. We got a late one.
We're getting a late barrage for worse simile.
Well, you know what? There is an element of superstition in there, which is why Francesco Totti, the captain of Roma, has been saying all week, there's no way Inter are going to win, and he says they'll make sure that they do for good measure. But anyway, there you go. Oh, Lord Charles, this is an unrelated thing, in Derby, says, James always comments that there are games at the end of the Italian season that the bookies don't take bets on. Since the final weekend of Serie A is approaching, would Jimbo be able to predict the results of the game? Well, one of the teams has nothing to play for and the other team does. Oh, yeah, I've got my paper down here. The thing is, Lord Charles, that this situation, sadly, is another little part of the whole kind of the picturesque nature of the Italian game, which is destined to disappear because they're going to introduce the same system as in the Premier League, where each position gets a certain amount of money for it, so teams will always have something to play for. But this weekend, the final weekend, it stacks up so that there aren't really games like that. You might think that, for example, Torino, who are now safe and hosting Fiorentina, would do the favour to Fiorentina, but I would say they had much more to gain by doing a favour for Milan, Fiorentina's rivals for the top four. So there aren't really.
Why is that?
Because, A, from a business point of view, Umberto Caido is a big publisher in Italy, and when it comes to publishing, strangely enough, the biggest force is a certain Mr. Berlusconi. So there you go. Nothing really that I would chance my arm on, and presumably if there was, the bookies wouldn't take your money anyway, Lord Charles, in Derby. But thanks for your comment. I think with that, we'll just move on to some posts. Shall we?
Yes, there was some very entertaining posts this week.
Congratulations.
Unfortunately, we can't read out one of my posts because it was moderated by our in-house moderators.
Uh-huh. What did you say, Barry?
I called someone a malevolent crank.
Right.
Which apparently goes beyond the bounds of banter.
Right, but Lord of Ponce's doesn't.
No.
There were some very nasty things, and I don't know, I mean, I think that enough time was wasted on this in the post, and Sean, you want to make a comment here.
Well, this is to say very, I'm the guy that employs Paul Dahl. I think people have a choice. You either want really bland, sit on the fence quotes from people that don't really say very much, or you have people like Paul that will make brave calls, sometimes outrageously wrong calls, but he makes those calls, and more often than not, he gets them right. And okay, for the United case, he didn't, but I'd prefer that than another, well, Team A might win it or Team B might win it, and they don't give you anything.
Mm. But anyway, and that's
I think
fair.
Paul's well able to defend himself.
Right. He's a big lad.
He's a big lad.
Scary
now,
looking man.
Well, indeed, Honolulu in Athens, USA, offers his best of pod life. Paul would beat up anyone in the pod. You don't know if you remember that particular episode of the show. Yeah, I think that's true. And various other things. And he asks, are we doing Euro? And can we now talk about what we're doing with Euro?
I think we can. We're going to send Barry and James out to Vienna. Well, James, you're going to eat lots of saccator.
What
and
could possibly go wrong, Barry?
No.
And we'll have a
James and Barry get sent to Vienna with hilarious consequences.
A daily show.
Yeah, that's where we're tuning into at least once.
We'll be living in a flat together, won't we, James? It's going to be like the odd couple. Would be in the same bed.
Right, with stripy pyjamas.
Yeah, not in a pervy way, just, you know.
What's pervy about you two being in the same bed?
Comedy device.
Back to the post. Chun in Leeds. Are you ever going to mention Stockport County? How many records do they have to break to get a mention? Never mind making the League Two playoffs. James Dark?
Hats off. They're in pole position to get the better of Wickham in the second leg of their League Two semi-final. Drew 1-0. Absolutely fantastic equaliser from Young Gleeson to secure a 1-0 draw down at Wickham in the first game. And if they can get Liam Dickinson fit for the second leg and then for the final, they've got a real good chance.
You are a machine.
A sad, sad machine.
Wow, James Starr. Yeah, tip of the cap to you. Volrath, 1987, says, nothing on Reid Costa's retirement. He played his last game for Benfica last weekend. He's now a director. A classic number 10 or 8, he says, if there ever was one. And one of the most underrated players of his generation. Him and Batistuta were a joy to watch at Fiorentina. Cole Coffey agreeing with him. Phenomenal player, says Cole Coffey. Unfortunately, overshadowed by Figo throughout his career. The same thing's happening today between Ronaldo and Deco. And Volrath, going back to him, says, with the current trend of athleticism, speed and hard work coming first, will there ever be room again for these slow, calculating and elegant footballers? Yeah, they're a dying breed, this type of languid artiste.
I think they are. It's a very long discussion, but I just think football has become far more athletic now. It's much more about how you play when you haven't got the ball, as well as how you play with it. And I think it's harder and harder for, you know, these sort of extravagances to exist, unfortunately.
But you could still have Dean Windus and Lee Trundle in the Premier League next season, which would be a fantastic sight for all to see.
I don't think you'd call it either of them a classic number 10.
I mean, Riquelme, this kind of thing we're talking about, yeah?
But Riquelme is a wonderful player, but he's quite slow and he likes everything to go through him. So it's quite obvious that if you cut off Riquelme's neck, you can cut off...
It's a bit harsh.
All right, then.
And surely against the rules.
But, that's interesting. I think these things are cyclical, and they come and go. And they in the same way that there was a time when it was all 4-4-2 and there was precious little room for the creative midfielder to carve out his own little kind of anarchic role, I think that has come back into the...
But taking from what I said earlier, I think the authorities have always changed things to make the game freer for the attacking side. In the past, you know, things like the professional foul they introduced, things like, you know, yellow cards for shirt pulling introduced. Yep. My sense is over the last 6-7 years, since Euro 2000, which I think was the greatest tournament ever in our lifetime, the 4-5-1 has dominated, and teams now are so fit and so aware and so better organised than ever before. It's harder for those creative players to exist. Not that they, of course they do, but not to the extent than perhaps they once did.
Rui Costa, though, he was a magnificent player, and I know plenty of people who know far more about football than I do. Gabriele Marcotti, for example, worships at the feet of Rui Costa, but I always felt it was extraordinary about him that he could do anything he liked with the football except put it in the net.
Yeah, I agree.
He could not score a goal except for once, except against bloody England, or twice, in fact. But yeah,
I remember there was, watching Italian football, whenever there was a major championships, both in... Whenever Portugal were playing, people were saying Rui Costa's gonna, and you'd watch him and you'd be disappointed. You'd see it now and again in Italian football, but as you say, a great move, a great piece of skill, but never quite had the finishing to make him one of the very best players.
Possibly he was just too nice a guy.
Was he a nice guy?
He was a nice guy. Probably still is, I'm guessing.
Did you ever share an ice cream with him?
Ice cream, no, but he certainly gave me the benefit of his opinion on some questions that I had on a couple of occasions. There you go. Now, I suppose we ought to have a sting because we pretty much run out of pod today.
Look, oh,
we
haven't done the FA Cup. We got the FA Cup. Reduced to soliciting these days.
Anyway, coming up in part three, awards. Bum, bum, bum. And I'll look forward to the FA Cup, which is this weekend. Right, well, on to part three then, and very, very shortly, courtesy of Martinza in Stockholm, we've got those end-of-season awards, as voted for by you, the listener, if you're one of the about three people who actually voted, so thanks for that, people out there. FA Cup, though, first of all, coming up this Saturday, Cardiff against Portsmouth. Crikey. Portsmouth, of course, the only Premier League survivors. Cardiff City hoping to become the first club from outside the top flight to lift the FA Cup since West Ham in 1980, and, of course, the first team from outside England to win since they themselves did in, when was that, 1920? Stunned silence. Portsmouth. Now, one thing about this, we've been talking a lot about this, the fact that Portsmouth have basically been just killing time, ticking over in all their Premier League games, waiting for this, making sure they didn't get injured or whatever, waiting for this game to come around. Is that going to cost them when they actually go out on the field?
I don't know. Is the simple answer to that.
It's a dangerous game to play.
It is a very dangerous game to play because they seem to think that they're just going to be able to switch it on Saturday when all evidence from the last few weeks would suggest that they might not be able to. So you would sort of, a small part of me, or actually a very big part of me, hopes Cardiff beat them, and you know they pay for their complacency in the build-up.
And of course, as well, we've got Dave James has been injured. Sol Campbell's
been injured. I believe he's back, and I believe they're both meant to be back.
But both of them that haven't played for a while.
Right.
You've got Jermaine Defoe is cup-tied. So while Portsmouth are rightly favourites, I expect a really dull, dour game. But there's no reason why Cardiff can't nick it.
I don't know what Cardiff have been like in their
Cardiff are 12th in the Championship.
We should go to James Darts. How have they been playing?
Well, you mean you say that Portsmouth turned off? I mean Cardiff, to an extent, have turned off as well. I mean they were still in the hunt for a playoff spot, but that sort of that flame sort of died quite soon after the FA Cup semi-final, and for a while they've been, to an extent, sort of turned off as well. It's a really tough game to call, and I'm not going to.
All right then.
You'd be watching it, James, as a non-interested team
outside
the Big Four?
You mean in the neutral supporter? Yeah, of course I would be. I'd love to see Cardiff win, although, you know, obviously you have to feel for Harry Redknapp, who never reached Wembley as a player, and this is the first time they're with a club even as a manager, isn't that right? So, well, there you go. And you always always want the underdog if you don't have a vested interest, I think, don't you?
A prediction?
No, I'm not going to make a prediction.
James is neither, and Sean?
1-0 Portsmouth. Very dull.
I'll go for Portsmouth because I want Cardiff to win.
I'll go for Cardiff then.
Are you regretting now from your lack of predictions that not having a bigger name in the FA Cup final?
Well, to be honest, we've had so many Big Four teams play each other over the years, and the last 20 or so years, I think I can think of two finals off the top of my head that have been decent: Liverpool, West Ham, and Arsenal, Liverpool. So let's hope that Cardiff and Portsmouth surprises. I just hope they both go for it. But in the semi-finals, both games were terrible. They were very cautious. You know, it's Wembley, just go for it.
And credit OSM for picking up on the fact that the Independent's Brian Viner, I believe it was, at the start of the season, said that if a team from outside the Big Four did not make it to the FA Cup final, he would be streaking, I believe, around Soho Square.
He said he's going to do a lap of Soho Square in central London naked.
So we look forward to that.
My word.
Or not.
My word. Well, with that, let's move on to our end of season awards. Producer Camby has diligently, because he's gone and dug out lots of these bits, I believe. Now, Martins are in Stockholm. Very kindly set up a little website that people could vote on. And this week he posted in saying, since the ballots for the end of season awards seem to be drying up, I've summarised the results. Here, I will try to mail... Oh, he's going to have some more results coming in later on. But in the meantime, these are the ones we've got so far. Best non-pun joke. Runners-up were Fernando...
At least one, if not several, of our listeners logged on to post comments to the effect that it was very boring and...
That's Chelsea!
They did.
The boring way.
Right, okay. And
the jingle, that's Chelsea!
Is that how the jingle goes?
Yeah, because it's really boring. It's like an American Sunny Delight commercial, isn't it, when they play. It's like, ooh, everybody, all those stars on the pitch, but it's so boring and artificial.
Kevin, can you check Fernando's cup? And... Sid and his astonishing short-term memory. Sid, you're in Valencia because you went to see Valencia's Get Out of Jail Act against Zaragoza, yes?
I do see their Get Out of Jail Act against Zaragoza.
Ronaldinho has been given now permission to chat to as many Milanese clubs as he wishes by Barcelona, yes?
Ronaldinho is chatting to as many Milanese clubs as he wants.
Ronald Koeman, out of the picture at Valencia.
Well, Ronald Koeman out of the picture at Valencia.
Valencia do stand a very real chance of going down. They're, 2 points away now with, five to play, is it?
Yeah, they're 2 points away with five to play.
Where you saw the 2-2 draw with Real Madrid, there's left Zaragoza in the bottom three, 1 point from safety with one game to go.
Yep, it has left Zaragoza in the bottom three, 1 point from safety.
Game to go. Go on, the whole sentence.
Yeah, go on, I'll just repeat you all the way through, shall I? Just to make
you
sure
do realise that listeners have been pulling you up for this habit.
Yes, I do realise the listeners have been pulling me up for this habit. And the winner was, deservedly so, Sean Ingle.
Well, I think Crouch is not a nice piece of work, and everyone sort of loved him about a year and a half ago when he did his silly robot dance. But, you know, I've got a friend of my Andy Bull, who works on the desk, whose mate works at a fast food place in Southampton, and Crouch. Right. Crouch to give
he's
you
well connected.
Yeah. Well, Crouchy came in one day when he was at Southampton and demanded some nachos. He said, "Okay, fine." Gave him some nachos, and then Crouchy said, "You do know I'm not going to pay for them." And you know this guy's on minimum wage. Didn't really care, so he handed over the nachos, and then Crouchy started eating them one after another. And every time he'd say, "Crouchy's having his nachos," over and over and over again. And everyone was just looking at him in silence. But that's the sort of behaviour you expect from footballers.
It isn't. I didn't expect that behaviour from anyone.
Fantastic stuff there. Worst non-pun, by the way. Well, the bat joke won that. Oh, we're not going to hear that again.
Go on, Cabby. Let's
go on. I had a rather funny joke about a vampire bat over Christmas. But do you want to hear that now?
Yeah.
Okay, here comes my vampire bat joke. So a vampire bat comes back to the vampire bat nest with his face all sticky with blood. And all the other vampire bats say, "Where did you get that blood from? Show us your secrets." And he says, "I will show you my secrets." So they all flap out into the night sky. And they go flying along, flap, 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 flap. And all the vampire bats go, "Blood." And they get to this big forest. And in the middle of the forest, there's this giant oak tree. And the vampire bat says, "You see the big oak tree?" And they go, "Yes." And he says, "Well, I didn't."
You wouldn't get Lineker doing that, would you?
A runner-up was Hair in Vain, the Dutch team that I think it was it Paul? We don't need to hear that one again. It was a rubbish pun. Best pun, we've got runners-up, Ronaldo's misses and no F in research, which we don't need to particularly hear again. But the best pun was this. Sunderland-Newcastle. Barry, that'll be an exciting game for you, Sunderland-Newcastle.
Well, I know I always say this, but this time I'm going to say it, and I actually believe it to be true. I think Sunderland will beat Newcastle.
Barry, I put it to you that you are like an Egyptian fish, living in denial.
That's gold. We should just stop the whole podcast now. No one's going to top that.
And then you've also got Ronaldo's unexpected tackles.
See why we didn't win a Sony Award.
Now, I have to say, in denial also was an entrant as worst pun with runner-up as... Oh, in fact, it won the worst pun category with as a runner-up that time when I asked if Hamburger were on a roll. And that, I think, is where we'll leave it, except for saying that the best episode, this will be controversial, was adjudged to have been that kind of two-hour-long giggle fest that we had with... who was in? Matt Scott and Paul McInnes and you, Barry, and myself on the 24th of April, Bantergate, Martinza calls it. Runner-up, the England staying home back in November when we saluted the passing of England's golden generation and their failure to qualify and the Wally with the Broly and all of those stories. Sean?
No, I was just going to say that was our most popular listen to episode. Yeah. We had 378,000.
Yeah. Can't argue with the numbers.
We put an end to this self-indulgent, self-congratulatory bout of onanism now.
Right, okay.
We didn't win an award.
There's
no point awarding ourselves awards. They don't count.
Indeed so. And with that, listeners, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, producer Camby, for digging up all those clips. Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
And you, James Darr. Outstanding.
Oh, thank you, James. Have a good time in Euro 2008.
Right, Euro 2008. Don't worry, we've got a few pods before then. We'll be around on Monday to preview the Champions League final and all things in Moscow. And then I think we've got one at the end of next week as well, at some stage. So lots to look forward to here on Guardian/football and that. But for now, from all of us here, many, many thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.